Hello, and welcome to At Your End Step. My name is Morgan, and I'm here with Mike.
Hello.
And we have another fun-filled episode for you folks this week. Before we get started, I want to give a quick shout-out to all of our patrons. Thank you so much for contributing every episode to At Your End Step. We really couldn't do it without you. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, you can check it out at patreon.com/@yourendstep. So we have a bit of a light show this week. Not a whole lot happening.
Yeah, like a laser light show.
I wish.
So crank those seats backwards.
So what plane would be projected on the laser light show?
Huh. I mean, my initial guess would be Meriden.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was leading.
A lot of sweet reflective surfaces, multiple suns for different colors.
It's true.
So you get a cool, like, it's like spacey show there. I feel like Kaladesh is the only plane that's come close technology-wise to having
lasers.
So that'd be cool, but they'd probably be very deadly. So yeah, they'd look at them, but don't get close.
They'd be real actual lasers.
Yeah.
But no actual laser light shows, but just a few things here in the community. And then, of course, we had our first big standard tournament, which we'll talk some on, but the results were, I don't know. Not surprising.
I think there's a little bit to dissect there and some surprising
for sure,
decks.
For sure.
So
first off, let's kick it off with the community segment. So the first thing that we want to talk about is we had a long sort of discussion about Arena and some of the things that they're doing. One of these things being the cat, the pet that you can obtain, and it's designed to be clicked on. Essentially, it does stuff when you click on it, and that's cool. It is a thing that people enjoy. But sometimes when you make these things that have effects on your opponent's side of the field, this one, opponent side of the screen, that may or may not cause them to get locked out of the game due to one reason or another, it becomes a bad thing. And it becomes so much of a bad thing that if you are abusing this sort of exploit that has been discovered, you might get banned for a few days. So Wizards has actually started to do that with people that have had multiple, basically they have certain parameters that you have to meet. You know, you're not just going to like click on it once and then be like banned for 5 days.
Yeah, no, if you were sitting there thinking like, oh man, I definitely like absentmindedly click on the cat, right? That's not you.
Yeah.
These people are literally, they keystroke it, 1,000 times in a match.
Yeah.
And get them to, so if you're doing that multiple times, right? Then it certainly seems like a pattern of intent.
Abuse. Yeah. So now they are aware of this being a thing that you can do. So they are going to implement a fix for it at a later date. And the bans are just supposed to be as a precaution, as being like, hey, we know that you're doing this. Stop doing this. And then to the room as a greater, like, we're going to be fixing this.
You know what the easy way to fix it is?
Not have it at all.
Not have it. Or just like, you can turn them off. You can, like, you, the player, can turn them off.
Yes.
And maybe you should, because they're worthless.
Yeah.
If you like it, take a picture of the cat and tape it to that exact part of your monitor where the cat would be, and then poke it with your real finger.
Then you might get, or, adopt a cat from a shelter, like a real one.
And, yeah, poke. 1,000 times a match.
It won't cause your opponent's, client to bug out, so that's something.
It might eat your finger.
You might not have a nice cat after the end of this experiment. you can actually, you can turn off emotes, which will turn off the,
well, you can also, as far as I understand, under your actual thing, you can actually turn off the pet stuff too. Like specifically the pet stuff.
Gotcha.
Emotes will turn it off from the clicking, but you can actually turn them off. Which is good. You don't want turned on pets. That's a messy situation. And this one's like fiery. So like,
I don't know what that looks like. So, as Bob Barker would always say, please spay and neuter your pets. I guess real life or digital? I don't know how that works.
I think you tried to spay the digital pet, you cut a hole into your monitor.
Your monitor? Yeah, probably a bad idea.
This is where I neutered the cat. What cat? The one on Arena?
The digital,
one? Cat? Yeah. I'm not smart.
But he can't get banned now because he can't click on it anymore.
I guess that's it. It's like, I don't know, like, you definitely deserve to be banned. I there's some people who get frustrated with like, well, if the bug is there, that's there to be exploited. However, like, you are it's more than just like exploiting a bug to do something is feels different than this, which is you are winning because you are actively destroying your opponent's play experience. Like their system is crashing and the game is kicking them out because mm-hmm. of what you're doing. And that's a really gross exploit. So
yeah, it's not the greatest. And realistically, like even if you were like exploiting like a bug on motor or something like that, like I think like that's pretty gross as well.
I don't disagree. I always get that weird look on my face. I've been playing some Moto this week. I definitely cast like a Wrath of God, and my opponent I cast an Elishnorn, Grand Cenobite, and my opponent sacked in response sacked a Selfless Spirit, and I was just like, what are you trying to gain here? Right? Like, I see those little things, and I think, like, only Moto opponents do that, right? Only Moto opponents would think, like, maybe this will somehow not kill my board. Like, it could just be a bad player, don't get me wrong, or someone who just wants something to do. But whenever I see those things, it makes me feel like you're trying to exploit something.
Maybe it's just, like, a memory thing, like, this is, like, I should just, even though I know this won't do anything, like, I should know what things I can do just and do
like,
them.
Electroshock because of it, like... The poor guy in the beginning of Ghostbusters. I was listening to other people talk about how, like, my opponent just, like, straight up on turn three cast timely reinforcements and got three creatures. It's like, oh, were they exploiting the bug? And it's like, well, I had no creatures in play. And they were at a higher life total than me. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say, yes, they were just trying to get three creatures.
Yeah. Mike and I were talking about it, but the whole, like, combined queue for some of the events now, it's just like... Man, it's the Wild West out there.
I sent a picture to our Discord. This is a very sidetrack conversation. For those who have listened to the show a long time, you know that I used to play Blue White Giftstrot a lot.
You have to be known for it.
And I definitely rebuilt that deck on Moto because I don't know what to do in Modern, and that sounded fun. And I sent a screenshot of like just like poetry in text form, which was my opponent casting like Voracious Worm after gaining a bunch of life in a turn, and then me casting Day of Judgment and then them immediately disconnecting from the match. So they did make an 18-18 Voracious Worm, which it gets counters on it equal to amount of life you gain that turn.
Yeah,
but they're playing an aura that whenever it attacks or blocks you gain 4 life. It was not optimal.
Okay,
which is fine. It doesn't have to be optimal.
That's true,
but there was a queue for decks like that so that those people didn't burn their tickets.
Well,
now, granted, I just said I'm playing Blue White Giftstrot. It's not a real deck either. I get it. Wasn't playing Voracious Worm.
True.
And if you were like, you're that person playing Voracious Worm and you're offended right now, you disconnected and had to be timed out for me to win. So I don't give a... I stopped it.
You did.
I stopped it. Because that's bad manners too. I don't like it. So I guess we're just saying here, like, don't bad manners. You'll go to 5-day ban.
Yeah, see, we came back around to it in the end.
I guess you could flip it around and be like, hey, if you like bad manners, people, you know, here's a free coupon. For 5 days off Arena.
Enjoy your 5 days and come back in 5 days.
Please come back.
So the only other thing that we wanted to touch on community-wise was something we mentioned a little bit last week is that we do have San Diego Comic-Con this week and that we are going to get more information on what archery is going to be, and that's going to specifically be Saturday night at San Diego Comic-Con. So I don't know if this is going to like play into people's like fatigue or anything like that. I obviously don't think we're getting cards. We are getting information about the set. So likely the name, the setting, maybe something about the you know, inhabitants of the setting, what you know, kind of creatures and things like that we may see, and maybe some like general theming. But I don't think we're going to get anything specific wise like mechanics, because usually they like to show mechanics with cards. That might be a little bit different if it is like a snow set. So if it is Kaldheim, because then you know one mechanic will likely be snow.
It's snow.
But
cool. Sorry.
But I don't know. Do you feel like, are you excited about knowing what the fall set's going to be, or are you still like, let me enjoy like what we've gotten so far, and I don't want to hear about anything else until later on?
You know, I really can't tell. I can tell for sure that I'm certainly not as excited.
Okay.
The intrigue is not here. I don't feel the same affinity for the buildup that I even felt last year. And a large part of that is the amount of things we've gotten right in a row. Now, granted, this set is still pretty far off.
Yes.
And it's certainly interesting we don't have a name or anything like that. But I don't know. I feel tempered. I feel like, okay. Like, yeah, more Magic cards.
Do you think, like, you'd be... Do you think you'd be more excited if you didn't know... if you didn't know it was going to be, like, a new plane? Is that, do you think, like...
No, a return to a plane doesn't do anything for me right now. Like, gotcha. Unless it's literally Dominaria again. Just take me right back. Just put it right into my veins. No, like, I think, like... I don't know. The places that are high on the list to return to right now aren't sets that I have a lot of attachment for.
Mm-hmm.
I did probably the best I've ever done in Magic during Theros block.
It's true.
But like Theros is just not a plane that I think has a deep well, at least how they worked with it before.
Mm-hmm.
Despite needing to get Elspeth, we need to get her.
Gotta get her.
And like I can take it back. Here's what I'd be excited about. I'd be excited by Phyrexia. That's what I'd be excited by. But again, like that's me. I sound old and curmudgeonly saying that. Like, give me Dominaria or the threat directly from Dominaria, or just like Koth. #Koth. #Watch2019.
Yeah, 2019. Probably going to continue to 2020. We get it. We understand.
Hey, it's Candlelight Vigil at this point. What if the first art they show is just Koth standing on a cold mountain?
That would be wild. I'd be excited immediately.
That would change everything.
At the very least, like our podcast as a whole would rejoice. Koth, 12 people around the world would be so happy.
Koth and Garrick, arm in arm, they have joined together. They are, I don't know. Let's ship it. Madly in love. They have found their mountain, and there's a movie called Cold Mountain, but I don't think that's what this is about. But I don't want to make the generic like Brokeback Mountain joke, because that's not what I mean.
No.
But I want them to like. They both have things they need to do, but for one set, they found their mountain.
I see.
I'm writing a better Magic story than they are, so.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. But Garrick's like a bad guy now.
But that's the whole point. Like, he has to go back and keep being bad. He's literally got, like, he's holding the demon at bay. And what's holding the demon at bay is love.
For Koth.
For Koth. And Koth also shoved metal bits into his brain to keep the Hedron plugged nice and tight.
Nice and firmly implanted. That's there's some like weird subtext with that. I don't know if anyone really enjoys that.
Whatever. But I mean, in all seriousness, like I think I feel the same way about that set. And I'm throwing this like outlandish thing because one, I know they have plans for Garrick. Two, I want Koth to come back. Three, it probably will be Snow. But like, I don't know. I want to see them do something bold. And maybe that's unfair because War of the Spark ostensibly was bold.
Yeah.
And like what they did with the story. But I feel like there's so many little things that just like honestly pissed me off about it. And like, yeah, we still haven't done the third section of the book nook yet. I'm assuming you haven't finished the book yet.
Oh, I finished it.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, coming soon, I guess.
Yeah, it's coming soon.
But like, you know, as we talked about it in those, you know, give you a quick peek behind the curtain for those of you who aren't Patreon, you know, subscribers, but the book's not very good. At least as far as how it's written.
Yeah.
And, we're getting all this prequel stuff now, which is cool and enjoyable.
And I've heard it's good. I heard it's worth a read, even though the form that it comes in is less than desirable.
Yeah. I'm honestly waiting for pretty much all of them so I can read it at once.
Yeah.
But like it is just frustrating that, like, even with that bold thing, they still... So I don't know. I just want to see one cohesive vision of something bold. And, like, I like top-down sets. I like what Mark Rosewater has really done with Magic design that way. You know, Innistrad was still just a high point. It's just amazing. But Theros was not good to me. Like, it was not... It was just not as story coherent and, like, top-down in a frustrating way. And, like, I think, like, we talked a lot about Kaladesh. Like... upsetting some people and being frustrating as a top-down set. So I mean if we do Kaldheim, are we gonna get just like, are we gonna get like Marvel's Thor? Are we gonna get weird appropriation? Like what are we gonna get? So that's unfair because it's not even been announced
confirmed
yet.
So yeah,
I guess it's like this is the most speculation I've done on it because I've not cared.
Yeah.
Now part of that could be the way they did this announcement. Maybe we are gonna get something really bold because this is the first time we've gone this long without knowing a fall set's name. Right, you know, for the last few years, we've gotten announcement day dumps where we've gotten names for sets way, way in advance.
That's true.
So maybe it is going to be a way, but I guess like after seeing the recent modern bannings and like seeing, I don't know. I need it to grab me. I need it to shake the, you know, a little bit of this dust off because Oh boy, am I burned out a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, like, not to mention, just like, I think we're at a point in our lives where there's just like a lot of stuff going on, like outside of Magic.
Oh, sure.
And I think it's just hard to be maybe as invested as we were, like, previously. That's just part of growing up and like just becoming one of the best quintessential Cards Against Humanity cards, a busy adult with. With too many things to do. That's kind of what I feel like. I feel a lot more of like life in general, just kind of, detracting from my excitement, being able to be excited to spend.
Slowly turning to dust as the world turns.
You know, that happens to everyone.
I'm hearing the song. Did you specifically quote a Blink-182 song? Maybe this is growing up. I'm fairly certain that's the exact line.
I mean, but yeah, that's part of it.
That's certainly part of it. But and like the way that I play the game we've talked about this a lot, has changed. Yeah. For my wife and I bought a house, so literally outside of the Invitational and Gen Con, I'm just not playing weekend events. I played the MCQ. That was it. I'm not playing weekend Magic events at all. It's not a priority, and it just isn't. So there's a disconnect there for sure. I don't necessarily think the cards are worse. Modern Horizons like frustrated me, but like I've been proven wrong by at least how powerful the cards are. And like I don't think there's any. We were a little bit bored by the core set too, but again, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with the cards. I sat down today and played like 6 hours of Brawl with a friend who's on vacation, and we were excited about the new cards. We were excited to try out these new cards, but there's still something about like there is a malaise the longer that you are involved in these games. That like this is just the Goliath of sets rolling out. And again, I'm going to point to the fact they really did abuse their set release schedule recently. And this I think needs to feel like a pure direction, because if their announcement tonight is like, here's the set and here's also the duel deck that's coming out with it and here's Commander this and here's this and this, I'm gonna go, God, just let me focus on a set for a second.
Yeah,
because I know we're gonna get Commander comes out September,
yeah, something like that.
So it'll come out before the fall set, so we'll get those previews first.
Yeah.
So it's just, they are a company that needs to make money. We've said this a million times, but there is something for just letting your product stand, and it feels like ever since Arena caught fire. And I know they planned some of this stuff a long time out, but some of this has definitely been piled on. You know what I mean? Like, they are feeling the need to, okay, the player base is excited, jump on it, keep them latched on. But, like, there's also something to be said that, like, you can't throw so much stuff at a wall. It just can't. So, I don't know. I'm excited because Mark Rosewater's passion has never wavered, and I trust the guy completely with Magic, but I'm hoping for something bold. You know what I mean? I am. And I'll be very honest. I don't know that Snow was bold, so.
No. It's cold. You have to roll 1d4.
Nice.
Psychic damage. if you haven't listened to Dungeons and Daddies, it's very good. It's not a BDSM podcast, but
I'm fairly certain. The first person I saw tweet about that was Ashlyn Rose, the cosplayer, and I was like, okay. And then I saw like three or four more people, and I was like, okay, I'm going to subscribe to this. And then it sat there subscribed to for about 2 or 3 weeks, and like I was like, all right, I'm going to listen to this now. It's just.
Yeah,
it's just a magical time.
Mike told me to listen to it because we are fairly big Adventure Zone fans and other McElroy property fans as well.
Yeah, we're some good old McElboys.
We certainly are, and so we've listened to our fair share of Let's Play podcasts. I like to listen to Friends of the Table, even though it's kind of dense. We're fans, to say the least. And this one, I've only on it like just the beginning of the second episode, but it's pretty funny.
It's great.
It's pretty funny.
But yeah, so I'm excited for at least tentatively excited, but like it'll need to be something pretty interesting to make me not look at it and just go, like, here's 300 more cards. And like, I'm not going to stay up with like a regular standard set. Arena's already changed how I think both of us stay up on standard sets. Like, most of the I own standard cards, a lot of it's based around Brawl.
Yeah.
It just really is. And it will probably continue to be that way, but I don't know. I don't know anymore. I keep saying I don't know. Like, I'm trying to be derisive of this because, like, they've obviously planned it this way for a reason and let this name simmer for so long. So I'm assuming that, like, they're really hyped about the piece of art we're going to see and the name we're going to see. And I'm hoping I feel something, anything.
Probably another Cards Against Humanity card, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, feeling something, anything.
Yeah, also a tiny horse and geese. I don't know. I just like they've really just... Now I just feel like I'm ranting, but they've really abused some of their property. And I think about, like, you know, Chandra's my favorite planeswalker. If you came into my home, you would see that I have an oversized Oath of Chandra card. True. I have a lithographed print of Chandra that was given to me.
True.
I have... this one's not currently hanging up, but I have the game day mat with Chandra, with the foil Chandra, the firebrand. Like,
yeah.
Like I this is something that I appreciate and I enjoy displaying.
You got a full sheet of foil War of the Spark.
Well, that's true.
That's got a Chandra on it.
That's got a Chandra on it. I got the Chandra Funko Pops, the only Funko I have.
There you go.
So I take it back. I have a Jace. My brother gave me a Jace. But they fight each other. It's cool. so like I'm the Chandra person and I went, oh, okay, three more Chandras. Four more Chandras, actually.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's just...
I'm ready to see another Red Planeswalker. Cothwatch 2019.
Yep. It's a love story.
All right.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first,
My
yeah.
gosh. If I just pulled that out of the ether and it was just like... Like, we just got, like, arrested. Like, how did you know this?
The Watsy cops are going to show up at our door.
Well, the only way we could have known it is some Minority Report, like, stuff. Yeah, so some pre-crime.
Some precogs found us out. All right. So before we jump into our competitive segment, do you want to give a quick shout-out to Comic Town? If you are interested in checking out some of the other stuff they have on there, they do have a comic book podcast called Black, White, and Red All Over. You can check that out at wordofcomictown.com. And while you're there, you can also check out some of the upcoming events that they have that are Magic-related. Or, again, their 25th anniversary is coming around the corner. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to be planned for that. So keep watch on their website for more information. All right. Competitive. We had our first... Standard term. We did have a couple of GPs that happened over the weekend. They were all limited, so congratulations to the winners of those GPs. We will not be talking about them. we're going to mainly be focusing on the Star City Games, as Mike has aptly and correctly titled the SCG Worcestershire Sauce Open. Again, was standard. So we have a couple of interesting kind of points to look at. The first thing I did want to... Do you want to start with the top eight, or do you want to look at the metagame breakdown?
I want to look at the metagame breakdown first. I think it's interesting because, again, the top eight doesn't always paint the best picture, but I thought this was fairly interesting. One, the most played deck was Simic Nexus, only by one copy, but it was still the most represented deck, and I find that just hilarious. I'm so glad it's about to rotate, but, man, am I just tired of that card in general. But also Simic Flash, which is a deck that really caught fire, like, this last week leading up to this event. I have to look back. I don't know if did I have a top eight finish? I don't think that it did.
I can't remember, but I'll pull it up.
Yeah, I can only look at one tab at a time on my phone. I'm very sorry. But then Orzhov Vampires with 8 copies, Mono Blue Aggro 8 copies, Team Relemental 6 copies, Mono Red Aggro 6 copies, Esper Super Friends and Esper Hero both with 5, so they're actually, like, 10 Esper. And then you have a couple copies of Gru Aggro, Simic Ramp, Rakdos Aggro, Boros Feather, Naya Feather. Copy of Jund Dinosaurs made it today, too, and actually did pretty well in the event.
Yeah.
Just a couple other random stuff that I thought was interesting. But, you know, we had a couple of, you know, decks that we talked about, like Orzhov Vampires making a real name for itself. You know, mm-hmm. Team Relementals making a real name for itself. You know, I pre-ordered one Omnath. One for Brawl, because I was like, I think I want to build around this card for $5. So happy.
That's a great deal. The highest placing Simic Flash deck is 13th place, by Brandon Dempsey, so just outside of top eight.
So interesting, and there's a Sultai version now as well. It's actually playing the pirate, the poisoner, Direfleet poisoner, and stuff.
Oh yeah,
so,
that makes sense.
But yeah, let's look at the top eight here and talk about these decks. I thought it was, you know, a number of decks that. And a number of tribes that are about to rotate out, having that moment in the sun.
So, first and foremost, we're looking at the top eight list on MTG Goldfish, which is a pretty good place to get your lists. Sometimes, not the best, but this is actually a pretty good breakdown because it gives you the price of the decks. And my gosh, Like, if you are a budget player and you don't have a lot of money to spend, this the first and second place deck are like, you dream to see this.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's $53 in first place and then $38 in second place.
That's like the Moto Tix price. You can build Ross Merriam's Mono Blue deck for
$5. Five whole, well, tickets, but, you know, dollar the ticket.
Yeah, technically a dollar equivalent. It's probably not, actually. It's probably like
a little bit of tax. Now. Yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. If you're buying it from a bot or something like
right,
that.
Right.
So the winner was Erin Barich playing Mono Red Aggro. She defeated, as Mike said, Ross Merriam playing Mono Blue Aggro. And it feels like we've gone back in time to a different time and place. You know, it makes sense for week one, to be perfectly honest, to kind of see these two decks in the top two places, because aggressive decks are great week one. They traditionally have been. People are trying new and weird things, and sometimes it just doesn't come together. You know, you have things like Teemer, which I imagine have a decent aggressive matchup, but also have a three color mana base, and also may not have as good of a matchup against the aggressive decks than they thought. And you know, we see one in the top eight here. But again, you kind of never know what's going to show up and what people's exact builds are going to be looking like. With looking at Barich's list, we see some new additions of a card that we talked a little bit about, Ember Hauler, like the tiniest bit. We basically said it was playable the last time it was in Standard. And it's actually replacing the two mana wizard, which, you know, obviously still playing. Oh no, that's right. Okay, that's what they're not playing the Wizard's Lightning. That's the obviously. Yeah, they're playing the shift.
Skewer the Critics, and she has just an Ember Hauler instead of Yashiro Pyromancer.
Yeah, exactly. So,
that is to set up sort of the marquee card in this deck, which is Chandra Spitfire.
Oh yeah.
So, which is interesting because I do think the Lavamancer or the not the Lavamancer, Pyromancer, could do that too. But you get to time it the way you want to. Chandra Spitfire is an interesting card. I've seen a couple different lists that are going all into this card. So we didn't talk about this at all in our decks, our thing. This is two generic and a red for a 1/3 flying elemental. It says whenever an opponent is dealt non-combat damage, Chandra Spitfire gets +3/+0 until end of turn. So when you look at this deck, you know, and you have one of these in play, you ping your opponent with Fanatic Firebrand. That's a trigger.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to go with that's a Paddling. Ember Hauler them. That's a Paddling.
That's a Paddling.
Goblin Chain World them. That's a Paddling. And any of your burn spells.
Also a Paddling.
So, you know, you have a lot of ways to sort of go off with this, and it being a flyer is pretty relevant.
Yeah.
When you look at like Teemer Elementals, for example, outside of Cavalier of Thorns, your flyers tend to get through. Maybe Hydra Crisis, but like, you know, this card can get through against a lot of decks. And all of a sudden, you're talking about turns that are just massive with this card. So,
yeah,
when you say mono red, you know, like you know, Dave, you know, messaged our Discord, you know, former host, and he was like, "Hey, I know you're gonna be surprised, mono red one." And I was like, "Oh, okay, I didn't even look." But then when I saw this list, I was like, "Okay, this is mono red, but this is not what I pictured. I pictured literally the list that we've seen for a long time now. And this is pretty bold to play, you know, this many different cards and entirely different card for the archetype in the Spitfire." So.
Yeah, and like shifting like your ability to literally like not play a bolt in exchange for Ember Hauler.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess you're still playing
Skewer. You're still playing Skewer, but it's not instant. I mean, it's certainly legitimate. Not,
and it changes things.
Yeah, when you talk about things like Experimental Frenzy, which only one in the main here with the other three in the sideboard, you know, this deck is trying to do something different and was successful.
Very much so.
So,
and you know, we see a deck sort of come back with you know, something, you know, something we just haven't seen in a while that just hasn't been good, which is mono blue. But it shows you like how just adding a few new cards to, you know, this sort of list, again piloted by Ross Merriam, can really change how effective a deck can be. You know, you add things like Spectral Sailor is just like another one drop, another pirate. So you can, you know, play things like Lugas Dispersal pretty effectively now. And then you have sideboard cards. You have Aether Gust and the Cerulean Drake. You know, now traditionally one of the, you know, tougher matchups for Mono Blue has been Mono Red. And even though it was still triumphant in this, you know, matchup, I'm having the access to things like the Aethergust and Cerulean Drake, I'm sure was fairly handy to dispatching other mono red opponents throughout the tournament. This is still a deck that is powerful for the time being, while you still have some, you know, solid payoffs for having a lot of islands in your deck. And I appreciate that all of the creatures, there's no generic mana cost in any of the creatures. They're all islands. It's fantastic. It's one island, two island, or three islands that you have to play. There's no generic mana being cast for these creatures. It's too bad you do lose it in obviously the spells, but man, these kind of decks, are, again, it's another aggressive deck. It's something that's going to be disruptive. And I think like this is a deck that you can play if you are really expecting Teferi to be very good.
That's a big key.
That can be something that can be said for a lot of the weekend. Is there are definitely a lot of times where we didn't see as many Teferis as we've seen previously.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. I think that we have Denver coming this weekend, which is standard. I'm waiting for Teferis to return.
Yeah,
I just like, when you look at this meta, like, you know, mono blue specifically, but even the elementals decks, like. Yeah, Teferi still, both of them still seem pretty good. So, yeah. Some of this is just players wanting to try a new thing. Some of it just, normal metagame shifting. But yeah, I've played against this matchup when you have Teferi in your deck. And the games where you just land a Teferi kind of stopped this deck from operating. So, for sure. It was the right call for this weekend. I want to mention some other things. You mentioned Cerulean Drake, which is great. But especially if people are going to these Chandra Spitfire builds, like,
yeah.
Yeah, sure, I'll block it. Forever. But also Unsummon, only one copy here. But a card that came back in this set that whenever it's printed, it's just fine. And these decks were already sometimes playing one to two, like Blink of an Eye, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And whenever you can shave mana in these tempo decks, it's such a big deal.
Yeah, and I think like that's one of the like great qualities of the Mono Blue deck is like you can leave up such insignificant amounts of mana and it always be very powerful.
100%. Like one of you, look what you're representing at one mana in this deck. Like
so many things.
Like Flash, you could have Spectral Sailor, Dive Down, Opt, Spell Pierce, Unsummon.
This is too many things.
I guess a lot of things. Now, granted, some of that's low impact. Op's not going to affect the board. Spectre Sailor may or may not impact the board. But, like, you still have to respect it at one mana. And at two mana, it's almost the entire deck. Because depending on the creatures you have in play, it's Wizard's Retort, Lookout Dispersal, Negate, all of the one drops I already said, and Merfolk Trickster is a flash creature. Like,
and if you're in a sideboard game, it could be what? Because Aethergust is an instant.
It could be Aethergust. It could be S's Capture. Like, it's or Tail's End, which I think is a really interesting one.
Which is definitely like one of those weirdo cards. But I heard a lot of people being like, I'm actually pretty impressed with this. And maybe just the upside of countering something like Legendary could be like the kind of effective thing about that card.
The fact that it counters like Planeswalkers, but also like counters like some of the abilities they do, like I think it's pretty important because speaking of like big Teferi, if your opponent's tapping five for that to try and get it, just like tuck like your Tempest Gin or something, or like they already have it or whatever, and you can do it to do some things, which is interesting, but not a card I'm super high on, but it's there. Let's talk with one of the new kids on the block here, third place Team Elementals.
Yep, Team Element and Elemental, excuse me, piloted by
TMNT,
piloted by Chris Johnson, and we've definitely seen a lot of different sort of variations of these builds and these lists. This one is playing things like Creeping Trailblazer, which gives your Elementals +1/+0, and then you can. It has an activated ability of it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each elemental you control, so it can get pretty big. It's even playing something like Overgrowth Elemental, which is kind of surprising, but definitely makes sense. Works well with the overall theme. Using a lot of Chandras as well. We have Chandra Acolyte of Flame as a 4-of, and then Chandra Awakened Inferno as sort of a the Awakened Inferno being a big mana, sort of payoff, always comes down, can always do something. And then the Acolyte of Flame making elementals itself is fairly powerful.
Well, so it's important here too. Like, so when you're looking at, so most of the builds that are playing Acolyte of Flame are really looking to abuse like those elemental triggers.
Yes.
Right. So like obviously, like if you have a Risen Reef in play, then making two elementals is disgusting.
Correct.
Overgrowth elemental also plays well with that because you sacrifice them; they don't get exiled.
Yes.
So you get to gain 2 life and put 2+ and +1 counters on your Overgrowth elemental every turn.
Right. Right.
That seems okay. It might be too cute because it's a 3-mana 3/2.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something interesting. Just to point out, like Awakened Inferno is a card I've played a number of these elemental builds. Not this one. I haven't gone with these aggressive builds. I've played some of the more mid-rangey builds and some of the builds that are also playing like Flood of Tears,
mm-hmm.
Which I have named Brian Gottlieb's Big Tears, which is a weird molding of names, but I don't care. But Awakened Inferno, in these elemental decks, like where you literally can -3 and not kill anything of your own, that's obscene in a lot of matchups.
Yeah.
And with like, I will say Leafkin Druid is a card that if you haven't played with yet, is overperforming like aggressively. People are not playing enough removal to really deal with those creatures. And a lot of the removal we do see are things like even here, like Shock doesn't kill the 0/3. Mm-hmm. And it's so consistently tapping for 2 mana.
Yeah.
Like
I believe it.
It is very, so like you can just play your creatures out and, you know, then all of a sudden Chandra's here on turn 4, turn 5. And you start embleming. It's tough to get around it. It's just, I like this deck a lot. It's solid. I also want to point out Cavalier of Thorns, which is the only Cavalier seen play, which makes a lot of sense when you see what's going on. Cavalier of Thorns, though, has shown itself to be really, really powerful. So
yeah, just being a 5/6, I think like the power and toughness, and obviously recurring things from the graveyard when it dies is powerful. Getting like advantage as soon as it comes in most of the time is really good. It may have been one that we were not very high on in the
I know myself I missed the element of it.
Yeah,
that's bad English. I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
I missed the elemental aspect of it, but the fact that it curves so well from Risen Reef, Omnath into Cavalier Thorns, because now you get a trigger on your Risen Reef and you get a land trigger on your Omnath. So like, I wasn't viewing it in that context. You know what I mean? I think I haven't seen a lot of other decks that are playing it just to play like a 5-drop. You know what I mean?
No.
But in these elemental builds, it, not only is it a big creature, right? But it just like, it plays so nice.
Yeah.
So
and realistically, depending on your elemental build, you actually have the ability to cast it, right? Like green is a big commitment.
And Leafkin Druid is a big part of that.
Exactly.
So,
You know, you can't say that for the other colors that are trying that would be interested in playing these elementals. They can't make that big color commitment.
100%. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So
the only one that's seen any play with that has been Cavalier of Gales because it fits the other color here.
Correct.
The red Cavalier. Sorry, but
nope.
But I mean, I think like these decks were, you know, even when we were like, okay, these are kind of interesting, but I've started playing them on Arena and like they're a lot more powerful than you think. And you think of something like Living Twister, which was already seeing a fair amount of play in like random Gruul decks. Like it's a big stonewall for a lot of decks. But it's got a lot of synergy here. You know what I mean? You know, you have the return to tap land, right? Because you throw it at your opponent. But when you have an Omnath in play and you don't have a land for turn, well, you can just keep getting triggers. And if those triggers involve like land drop 8, where you're just drawing a card, well, then you're just making sure you're doing that every turn. Like that's such a subtle synergy that you that didn't exist with Living Twister before, and it was already a playable card. And now, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
So I think it's there's some cool stuff with these decks. And I like this build a little bit better than some of the ones that we're trying to play. The galloping, whatever, the one that makes 1/1 elementals and it comes into play. Like stuff like that, I think, like, is a little too cute. And this deck also might still be on the too cute side, but I like it.
The one notable thing I think is, like, missing that a lot of people have been putting into these lists is Nissa.
Yeah, I like Nissa in these builds.
But so I think it's, you know, kind of an interesting takeaway to be like, well, this build didn't have it as more aggressive and it was, you know, successful on the weekend. So I'm not sure where this deck goes. It definitely has a lot of synergy and a lot of powerful things that it can do. I think your weak point is your mana. You did get 2 more dual lands from Magic 2020, which I think is helpful for sure. They are tap lands, but they scry. So I'm not sure how, you know, aggressive you can be. This list is only playing 2 Temple of Mystery. So, you know, they can't afford to play a bunch of tap lands. I don't know if the more mid-range builds can, you know. But I think, like, man, this deck would have killed for, like, fast lands or pain lands or something like that.
True.
But yeah, that's unfortunately we got some slower lands, and I think like that may hurt the overall like longevity of these aggressive more elemental builds. But I'm not sure.
I don't disagree, but like some of these decks are making it work, and like even like this one playing like Temple of Mystery. You know what I mean? Just like
yeah.
I don't know how I've been playing the decks with them, and sometimes I don't know how it's possible.
I think like you don't have any turn one plays, right? You're not playing elves on this list,
right?
Everything on your deck starts at two or higher. So except for shock, like you could potentially like playing a turn one temple turns off your turn one shock, but that's only even matters for a few of the decks in the format. Shock, we just talked about how shock isn't even at its best against this deck in particular sometimes, but a lot of the other decks that are floating around. So it's like the amount of times where you have to make the decision based on only the two temples it's probably pretty low, and a lot of the times you might just be leading on like a tapped pain land or a tapped shock land or something like that anyway on game one. So I'm sure that's probably why. If you're playing a list like this that's more mid-range and is playing things like Llanowar Elves, then maybe you have more of a consideration of how many tap lands you can play, but I don't know. Three-color mana bases in this format don't seem to be like the bee's knees, if that makes any sense. It's not free. There's a cost to it. We've been in some standard formats where it feels pretty free. I don't think this is one of those, unfortunately, even though it, like with the check lands and the shock lands, you would think it would be. But I think like we have a lot of complex color combinations,
right?
So you're wanting to play a bunch of multicolored cards, but also a lot of cards that have a lot of heavy like mana considerations. You're wanting to play Omnath, but also Cavalier of Thorns. It's like I want to play all the colors and also a lot of them. So I think like that's why the mana in these decks just isn't as free as we've seen in like last time we had the shock check mana base. I think that there were a lot more. We just had a lot more like multicolored cards that weren't so cost hungry. If that that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense for sure.
Because we can even talk about like Esper Hero, which actually shows up in eighth place. So there's kind of where we see our Teferi component. And this list has actually even moved away from playing things like Belhaunt. We don't see that in this particular list. We were seeing the Elite Guard Mage and Tomebound Lich.
Yeah, that card, I think it's pretty cool that's seeing play.
And I'm not surprised. Like we know that card's like absurd and like limited, and typically absurd cards in limited typically find their way into standard at some point in time. But this deck also picked up a few other things. We have some Disfigures showing up, and I think that might be the we have Aether Gust on the sideboard, which obviously makes sense, and Noxious Grasp,
yeah.
But I think that's it for the new M20 cards, but a few decent pickups. And Esper, when we take a look at the metagame breakdown, it was split evenly.
There are
between
five heroes and five controls.
So if you're just grouping Esper together, it was like the third most represented deck technically.
Yeah, it's not dead. It's certainly still here.
Definitely not.
And I'll say like this build I really do like, because Hero Precinct 1 is pretty good against these elemental decks. Omnath can deal with it. And like Chandra represents a problem for going wide, but if you can work around those cards, it's pretty powerful. And like Tomebound Leech, if people are playing like a bunch of Leafkin Dryads and Incubation Druids, both Druids, like yeah, this is where I want to be. You know what I mean? Go ahead, block it.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's something that can always get through and is going to get you advantage.
Yeah,
and this list is even playing something like Command the Dreadhorde as well to
right.
kind of take advantage of being able to
loot on your deck. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that. That's an interesting version,
for sure. I like the main deck's Kaya's Wrath as well, and I assume one more in the sideboard.
Yeah,
I think like that's a big thing, and we might be shifting into a format where something even like Time Wipe might be a good call as well, because like team or elementals and things that are playing to like a mid-range board state, especially something like Vampires, which is a bit grindier for sure, but being able to still have access to a sweeper that doesn't necessarily like hurt you as bad as it hurts the opponent is probably something you might want to even look at.
We're mentioning Orzhov Vampires. We do have two copies of those in the top eight. Fourth place, Zachary Keane, and fifth place, Dustin Taylor. And even the builds are fairly significantly different. So the creature base is pretty consistent, though Zachary Keane has one Vona Butcher of, is it Megan?
Magon,
in the main, and then a lot of Planeswalkers, two Gideon Blackblade, two Ajani Adversary Tyrants, and four sort of the ubiquitous Sorin Imperius Bloodlord. You know, and I think, like, that's, you know, very interesting. We talked about these creatures, like, Knight of the Ebon Legion and Adonis of Vanguard are a 1-2 punch of just, like, really tough to deal with creatures. Like, it is, if you're blocking mostly, if you're, like, if you're a green-based deck, Knight of the Ebon Legion is just impossible. It feels impossible. It really does. I do think I like Dustin Taylor's creature build a little bit better because instead of the main deck Vonas, he's playing a couple copies of Sanctum Seeker, which is sort of the Vampire Hellrider.
Yeah.
And I like that as like a secondary card to bring down with your Sorin. Like if you go turn one Vampire, turn Vampire, turn three Sorin, that, like your attack just like gets a lot more powerful and you get to just keep, you know, keep going with that. But I think both builds are interesting. And just shows you, that, you know, again, I think how powerful Sorin is, but really, again, those one drops, you know, of, you know, Knight of the Ebon, I keep doing that, Ebon, and even like Skymerger Aspirant just continues to just be a solid Savannah Lions, because it flies pretty consistently in this deck too.
And, you know, this deck is definitely leaned more aggressively with playing a Vicious Conquistador as
well.
Oh
yeah, 100%.
So you have 12 one drops effectively.
But again,
I guess 11. You're only playing three Legion Landing.
But a Vicious Conquistador is another card that, you know, when you look at the way these decks are being built right now, if your opponent's literally trying to play Leafkin Druid, Risen Reef, like zero power creatures, one ones, yeah, give me the 1-2 that's, even when it gets blocked, is still going to hit one. You know what I mean? I think that's a totally fine way to build right now. Even if you look at like Mono Blue Aggro, it doesn't have a way to you know, consistently block those things outside of, you know, you get a Merfolk Trickster, but it's 1-1s are doing the job. I don't mind that sort of building style at all to go a little bit lower. And again, I like Sanctum Seeker a lot. I like that sort of Hellrider effect for Vampires, because I think even in Mirrors, it's really swingy.
Yeah, so I could see that.
I know that we should mention Bant Ramp, and I think, did Bant Ramp win the Classic? I feel like it also won the Classic. Hold on here, I'm going to click over there and do that. Yeah, Bant Mass Manipulation did win the Classic. So these sort of ramp decks that are ramping into, again, you know, Entrance of Melody, huge Hydroid Crises, and you know, gigantic mass manipulations. This is actually really close to the deck that I played at the MCQ with, you know, Nissas and Teferis. I do want to mention a card that's seeing a fair amount of play in some of these green decks, Voracious Hydra.
Yeah. Benjamin Riley piloted this deck to a 6th place finish, and he actually wrote like a post on Reddit and was like, you know, Voracious Hydra kind of takes a little bit of the place of the, like, the Melody, card.
Right.
Kind of similar effect, you know, deals with a threat and leaves you with one. So he wasn't really sure how he felt about it at the end of the match, but, like, it's certainly an interesting card to try, especially, you know, when you're looking at Mono Blue being in the format. Because obviously, like, you get encountered by, let's say, like Spell Pierce or something like that. It's not something you have to worry about with this card. You still have to worry about the Hexproof.
Sure.
But you still get a creature, right? You still have a Voracious Hydra at the end of the day. And, you know, maybe, like, if you know what they have, maybe the play is to double the counters instead and just, like, try to have bash. A big...
Yeah. It does trample. So you
try to have a big guy.
I think what I like about this card is how it plays this role of... You said Melody, which is true, but, like having some, like... That tempo-y removal spell is so important, and this can hit some things that Melody has a harder time hitting, depending on its power and toughness. You know what I mean? You know, this at 3 mana kills a Risen Reef.
Yeah,
Melody's 5 mana to get that reef. You know what I mean? So I think that's pretty important because it, you know, becomes a 1-2. But with ramp, like, it's another good thing to ramp into. It's very good with Nissa. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and you can just represent, like, okay, well, you know, here's a, I put 8 mana of this. Here's a 16-17. So. Hope you got an answer for that.
So I'm gonna call a bunch of the you know, all the Bant Ramp players play the big giant Hydra, you cowards. Play the Hydra Legend, you cowards. Do it, do it. You're already playing. You know, what?
It does make these cost 4 less.
So you're just playing 7 Hydras in your list. Come on, draw more cards, kill more creatures. Do it.
Wait, hold on here. 7.
Hydroid Crisis is a Hydra.
Okay, you're right. Okay. Well, Hydroid could be like...
No, I understand.
It's like a Hydra.
I get it.
Nice. All right. Yeah, do it. Yeah. Let's go Hydroid Trample or Hydra Trample.
Do it, you cowards.
Hell Hydra. I do want to point out that also versus Hydra has a very good interaction with Teferi. Like, if you're just using it as a removal spell, then he was like, bounce it, do it again.
Yeah.
So.
And then another card that he talked about in his Reddit post was Shalai. Shalai just being, like, a fantastic magic card. Definitely did a lot of, like, positive things with, obviously, all the effects that it has. Giving all your stuff, hexproof is a big deal. And he was trying to figure out trying to find a room for a third one somewhere within the deck.
Yeah, I like Shalai when I play these lists, too. Again, Shalai with Nissa lets you do some really cool things, like where you can attack with the lands. And then, you can tap them in combat to add counters to everything. And it gets really tough for your opponent to... It's like, you get to attack and do that. It's like, yeah. And probably twice if I untap. So, it's pretty great.
I think, he was thinking about trading the because he is playing one Entrancing Melody, cutting that and playing the third Shalai. So, I don't know. Just some stuff that I remember, reading from his post when he did his tournament report. Sure, sure, so.
In seventh place, we had Oliver Tomashko playing Boros Feather, and Feather is a deck that really, it's not playing a ton of new cards, but the new card that it specifically got is super powerful for it, and it's really helping it come back up. And that's God's willing. If you can look at any single card that looked at an archetype that existed in Standard and gave it a push up, it's God's willing for Feather.
For sure. And, to be honest, it's weird when you think about this deck, but Temple of Triumph, this deck is 100% a very mana-hungry deck. And, all the Boros decks that have existed have been, we are so demanding of our mana that we need to play, Guild Gates.
Right.
And it's just okay, well, you don't have to do that anymore. You can actually play a pretty solid land. And, again, this is another deck that... You don't necessarily have to interact turn one. You could take that turn one off to set up, because normally you are playing things like a turn behind when they might show up. You might be playing your 10th District Legionnaire on turn three, or you're probably playing your Feather on turn four, so you can hold something up. So taking that first turn, to scry is fairly effective. And again, much like the original heroic decks, scrying is super powerful in these lists, because you can obviously shift all of the garbage to your bottom, all the lands, so you don't need any more, and just being able to repeat that with Feather and do it over and over again, even with your lands, is fairly effective, especially in the early turns where it's like, I play this, put this land at the bottom, I don't see it again, because I just want to keep drawing action.
Yeah, and this deck does, really benefits from those scries, like you said. It gets to scry off of, now off of Sheltering Light, God's Willing, and every time you target your 10th District Legionnaire, you can really craft your draws. So, the metagame breakdown mentioned the Naya Feather decks, and some of those builds are kind of interesting. Some of them I've seen have played, they're either playing Gruul Spellbreaker.
Yeah.
Most of them are playing the green enchantment, which I can't remember, Cycle of Life or something like that. Yeah, is that what it's called?
When you target your own creature.
You draw a card, and whatever a creature.
It's you scry, I think.
No, when a creature comes into play under your control, it's scry. When you target it with a spell, you draw a card.
Okay.
Which is exactly something the Feather wants to do. I don't, and based on the results here, I still don't think it's worth stretching your mana for.
You should just be playing. The mana is already so difficult in these lists, I think you should just be playing Boros.
Right.
You're playing Giant Growth's not gonna really, that enchantment's not gonna affect your board, and there are plenty of good creatures to already be playing with this kind of archetype, so I wouldn't try to push it. But I would love to play this list. I think it's really, really cool. I'm sure it's probably fairly difficult to play because the, heroic decks were fairly difficult to play back then, and this is not as good as those decks even were. Yeah. So you really have to navigate pretty deftly. So
So outside of the top eight, we have Civic Nexus
showing up a lot,
a ton. Just outside of the top eight, I will say the most common new card out of those decks is definitely either Veil of Summer or Shifting Ceratops, which is getting a ton of sideboard play. And I'm glad that Ross Merriam did well with it, but I do not want to be the mono blue player sitting on the other side of Shifting Ceratops.
No, it is a beating. Don't discount Temple of Mystery, to be honest.
No, that's true. Oh, that's true. Okay, that's fair. I'm taking that for granted, and you're very right. You're very, very right.
Getting, playing a, you know, you saw some of these lists that were already playing, like, Simic Guildgate. So, like, now you just get a strict upgrade, and it's, like, amazing in your deck. So, I think, like, that it helps a lot, along with, like Veil of Summer. And, I mean, even, like, looking at Dylan Donegan's list, he's playing a Mu Yan Ling in the sideboard.
That was interesting. I wonder what that was for, but it's interesting.
So, lots of stuff. I mean, Aether Gust is another
That card is
another
also,
big thing.
Yeah.
Like you get you know 6 hate cards out of your sideboard, which is fantastic. You get 9 because she thinks Ceratops, of course. So you get a ton of stuff, and like, man, these decks are just pretty good. And I'm glad, like, I'm like sad that it didn't win. Like, I'm honestly sad that it didn't win. So. Like, we couldn't see that this is going to be a problem. And, like, it's going to continue to be a problem, to be honest. It's not like Wizards is going to take time to do anything about it.
Oh, no. Now we just live with it. And it's whatever. It's miserable to play against, and that's just where it is.
Yeah.
Just concede quickly. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's only going to be here until the fall set comes out. So, and yeah.
Archery.
Hopefully, by then, we'll just have forgotten about it. But, I think, like, even though, you know, we just talked about being kind of blasé about, you know, Corset 2020, it did show itself to be somewhat impactful in a lot of different ways. You know, the hate cards are pretty much all seeing play, including the green one that we're like, was kind of like not that impressive. And, you know, we're seeing some interesting new takes, on archetypes that existed before. We are seeing some archetypes that have been kind of given their last hurrah in mono blue. So, I mean, it is doing a lot more than you would expect, I think, a typical core set to do.
I don't disagree. I want to mention one more deck quickly because we already mentioned it. Ban Flash, 13th play, Simic Flash, Brandon Dempsey. This deck is kind of like just kind of beautiful the way these things are built. 4 Spectral Sailor, 4 Brineborn Cutthroat, 4 Merfolk Trickster, 4 Frilled Mystic, 4 Nightpack Ambusher, which that card is a house in this deck.
Yes.
Then 2 Syncopate, 4 Unsummon, 4 Essence Scatter, 2 Negate, 4 Sinister Sabotage, plus lands. So, that is officially 0 cards you have to cast on your turn. Most of the times we've seen other builds of, like, you know, Simic Flash, or you have to play something on your... Nope. 0. None of it. Don't care. And this deck is kind of difficult to navigate against. If you don't have a good removal spell, Brineborn Cutthroat gets real big real quick in this deck. But Nightpack Ambush is a blowout, and the way that it operates, I've already seen the sequencing happen a lot. Like, the go-to removal spell has consistently been Lava Coil when you're red-based, right? And Lava Coil deals with Nightpack Ambusher real well. Except, of course, they're going to cast the end of turn, and you have to wait till your turn to cast Lava Coil. And I can't tell you already how many times in Arena I've been like, oh, Lava Coil this, and I got a response, I'll flash another Nightpack Ambusher. And that's a 5/5, and you're like, please no. No, I don't want that. Please don't do that.
That's the opposite of what I wanted.
Like, in addition to the fact that they could probably just counter the Lava Coil, but when they get to counter the Lava Coil by just adding a 5/5 to the board, that's upsetting. I don't like that. So, yeah, it's a powerful card. Sideboard Plan is interesting, going into, like, a bunch of Carnage Tyrants and Growth Chamber Guardians, so it's like, you figured out my flash plan, so here's just better creatures.
But it's one way to go about it.
It's certainly a deck that, like, you know, flash decks appeal to people for so many reasons, but these aren't bad.
Yeah, this is another deck when you look at it and go, oh, okay, well then, you know, Temple of Mystery obviously makes sense. You know, we saw similar sort of Simic Tempo decks before this that had a little bit of steam towards the beginning of the War of the Spark, but kind of petered out. You definitely have a lot. And something you can say about this is, like, so Merfolk Trickster is rotating, you know, Syncopate. Is that one? When would we get that one? Yeah, that one's going to be rotating. I don't know if Essence Scatter is. I don't. Did we just get that in something? I can't remember.
Say that again.
Essence Scatter.
Did it get reprinted?
Yeah, I don't know if it didn't. So that one might be leaving. And like some of your 4 of your lands. So like a lot of the stuff is still staying around or going to have something that could potentially be used to replace it. And maybe you have to look at your sideboard and replace a few slots here and there, but a lot of what's going on here is still going to be something that you could potentially do when rotation happens, maybe in a different way. Unfortunately, you know, you do lose a creature, which is hard in these kind of decks. So I'm not sure, but yeah, interesting.
Yeah, very much so.
And you know, just play Bant and play the, you know, Tolsmere and just do those sort of things. Figure out a way to give him flash. Play Teferi. I don't know. Figure it out.
Yeah, and like, there's even other weird decks like hanging around here. It's not represented in the Classic either, though. The Classic has Azorius Aggro, which is like mono white, so like that's still a thing. But there's even like a blue white Skies deck that's been like hanging around.
Yeah.
That's playing Empyrean Eagle and Winged Words.
And you still have you still have Favored Winds in the format.
Yeah, you have favorable wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Dungeon Geist. So, yeah, there's a lot of cool decks you can play right now. So,
and like some of them have been like spirit focused. Yeah, as well. Like Supreme. So you can play Supreme Phantom.
Empyrean Eagle is a spirit bird.
Nice, so, perfect.
So yeah, some of them have Supreme Phantom and Danny Phantom and like a whole
all
bunch
of, all Phantoms
and the Phantom. So
you have that weird three mana the Spectral Hangman that exists as well.
Yes, the Spectral Hangman. I want to talk about humans real quick. Humans. Modern, I mean?
Yeah, modern.
I was really looking at the humans list.
I mean, like, humans play modern, so that makes sense.
I like looking at... That actually sounds weird if I say I like looking at humans.
Don't do that. That's
I
weird.
Appreciate...
That's weird.
The human form.
If you are worried about the Woxie cops showing up, I'm pretty sure the real cops will show up for that one.
The precog? Because I haven't looked at anybody yet.
I guess that's true.
But I will soon.
Don't do that.
So, I don't want to spend too much time on modern. I know we've been kind of long, and
this is the first tournament since the you know Hogak banning.
Yeah, this is
Hogak the bridge from below banning, I should say.
Yeah, well, it's very and like we see the format resettling back into what it was. Eldrazi Tron did win Miles Wilson, but that deck had been gaining a bunch of
steam recently, for sure.
Yeah, multiple copies of humans, multiple copies of is it Phoenix. We do have an Azorius Control, a couple copies of Grixis Urza in the top 16, which I did say was a thing that might come back. One copy of Azorius Spirits, so, you know, go Spirits. Proud
go
of you.
Go.
They're playing Unsettled Mariner, so there you go, Morgan. That card is, you know, sweet.
Card is sweet.
And we had Burn. You're just a cool Burn deck here with Skewer the Critics in fourth place, so keeping them honest. But... Yeah, I mean, the format looks essentially where it was. It's almost like you didn't change it a ton. You just took out one problem. So, no, we still have 1, 2, 3, 4 copies of Is It Phoenix in this top 16. So that's probably a little underrepresented. Maybe they did it. Maybe they fixed the format.
Probably not.
Oh, okay.
I don't think with the information that we got from the sort of last... Banner restricted update.
You don't have to bansplain me.
I just think, like, you know, we're going to have to settle on the idea that, you know, honestly, I think these results are probably some like better than we could have hoped. In the most represented deck in the top 16, we don't have any metagame data, but is it Phoenix with 4 copies? And then we have humans with 3. And everything else is like a one of or a two of.
Yeah.
Two of Burn. We have a colorless Eldrazi list. We have a couple of Eldrazi Tron lists. A couple of Grixis Urza lists. And then like some weirdo one-offs. If anything, like, it's not as diverse as we're typically used to, which is certainly, you know, something you can state. But we also don't see like Dredge, which is surprising.
That is surprising.
We don't see like traditional Tron.
That is not as surprising. That deck has been
backburner
for a while.
I think Eldrazi Tron is kind of... They switch off, you know?
I guess that's true.
I really thought that Eldrazi Tron was sort of preying on the Hogak lists, and like that's why it was being like so popular to see that maybe that's not the case, and it's just like... good again because of the things you can do with Karn the Great Creator, and maybe people just realize like that card is super busted still. So Maybe that's just what we are going to be seeing going forward. Something that people were definitely saying, like, Eldrazi Tron can play creatures more effectively, which helps it against, like, Planeswalker decks. Things like, you know, blue-white control and what
sure,
have
yeah,
you.
Sure, yeah, no, being able to, you know, hit those big Planeswalkers is important.
Yeah. Oh, Jund. There's no Jund.
Yeah, that is surprising, too, because it's definitely gaining some popularity.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole drive why, like, not the whole drive, but a large portion of the drive why, like, Ren and Six is a ridiculously expensive card now.
Yeah.
And to not see it show up is just kind of weird. Now, it's a classic, you know, you can only take, you know, derive so much information about the overall meta. I'm excited to see what happens, you know, in Columbus in a couple of weeks. I'm excited to see what happens at the Pro Tour in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, really I think that's like, where I'm just kind of sitting is waiting for the Pro Tour.
Is seeing where Modern is actually truly sort of settling. Now, the Pro Tour, I do expect a lot of Izzet Phoenix, to be honest. So that one I feel like is going to be a little bit tilted and a little bit biased towards like the pros just wanting to play like the best blue-red cantrip deck there is, which is going to be Izzet Phoenix.
Yeah.
So that's what I expect. I also expect to see a lot of humans because it's just like a default like good deck. You know what I mean? Like, people are just like, I'm just going to play humans. Because that's what I played at the last Modern Pro Tour, so why would I change? So, there definitely is a lot that is going on. And, you know, this isn't truly groundbreaking, and there's a lot of weird things that we're just not seeing. This almost feels like the same metagame that we had before Hogak, just with no Hogak decks.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And those decks aren't entirely gone.
No,
so.
they certainly aren't. No. And the other thing we don't see, we obviously had the London Mulligan for this tournament.
Right.
No Neoform combo as well.
That is interesting.
No, really no combo at all, to be honest. Not saying that, I guess, like, if you're, I don't know where you classify Grixis Urza. I don't know if you classify that as an artifact deck or a prison deck or a combo deck. It's kind of all of them. You know, it's a jack of all trades within those lists, but nothing even like Storm, you know, showing up and having like potentially just people slipping on Graveyard Hate and trying to like spike it with that. Again, just kind of like a weird like lack of diversity here in the top 16, in my opinion, and a lot of decks that were gaining steam that we expected to kind of continue to do so just didn't.
I mean, you can draw. I do want to mention something about the Modern Open though that is worth talking about when you asked about
Modern Classic.
When you mentioned like feeling about like the new set and that sort of thing, I think this is still a really good standard format. There's a lot of obviously really cool decks, but the Open had less than 400 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
The Classic for Standard had 83 people in it.
Ah,
the Modern Classic had 250 people in it.
That's wild.
So you're talking about an Open that. Almost was how I'm gonna phrase this. The Open as small as a Classic, or the Classic as big as an Open?
Right.
But like, that's really interesting to think about, and it's frustrating because like those are the kind of numbers that will stop Star City from having Standard Opens again. So
it's also like week one Standard, and
it is, and like maybe people again here's the thing: maybe people who got all these like Modern Horizons cards have no desire to buy Standard cards. They just paid for these expensive Ren and Sixes.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
That's definitely a consideration.
And vice versa. Like if you look at a bunch of those decks, like, well, if I want to play Modern, not only do I have to have these cards, but now I have to have Ren and Sixes, or I have to have Urzas, or I have to have Aria Flames. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting that they might be eating each other's lunch a little bit, which is interesting. All right, let's finish up. Let's finish up.
Yeah, so the last thing we want to talk about is... I cannot say the question verbatim, but over the weekend, again, we did talk about Aaron Barish winning the entire tournament with Mono Red. And there was some controversy, as to be expected with Magic tournaments these days, regarding some... I want to phrase it delicately. Like, do you want to say like questionable plays or outright game rules violations?
It was a game rules violation. Yeah. That's what GRV. So, that's what it was.
Yeah. So outright games rule violations that were happening during a match that was being streamed. Aaron had a frenzy out and played Life to Stage from her hand.
Yeah.
And this wasn't caught, and it was. Definitely something I know. I didn't look back and watch the clip. I'll be perfectly honest with that. But I know that Aaron was definitely playing, like,
they're up a game already, and her board state was obscene. Like,
sure.
She was winning that match well before that happened.
Yes.
So like, it was, if you're looking at it as like cheating, it's a weird time to cheat. I will say that. Like, this is, here's the thing. I think the reason I put this as the question of the week, and I didn't put a question down. I just put down, why is the community a big pile of blank? Because this erupted. Now, granted, we've had this happen before, and I know we've talked on here before, and I wanted to sort of use this as a time to be critical, maybe of at least myself a little bit, because there have been times where I've seen these clips and gone, oh man, that's really bad. And maybe it's Usum to 10. I guess I want to balance these things, because this whole issue did make me question how quickly I think at times I have been like, oh, well, that person, that's cheating. You know, we've talked on here before about our own errors. I know I saw a couple of people like Cedric Phillips were tweeting out like, I once did this, that happened. You know, I've said it on here before. I once in a back-to-back weekend tournament where Saturday was a PTQ and Sunday was an IQ, in the top 8 of the IQ, I cast Gifts Ungiven as intuition. See, normally you cast Gifts Ungiven to get 3 Wrath spells and the 4th card, which is normally Path to Exile or Time of the Reinforcements. I did the inverse and cast it for 3 Path to Exile and Wrath. Because in my brain, I said, I need a Path to Exile, and I cast it that way, and my opponent resolved it that way, and put a Wrath and a Path in my hand. And it wasn't until one of the players on his side was like, wait, how did you cast that Gifts? And I was like, oh, like intuition. That's how I did that. And here's the thing. I proceeded to win that match. I was like, I'm not conceding this. I'm sorry. Like, that sucks, but like, it is, and I felt bad about it, like, but I never thought myself as cheating there. I definitely like broke the rules and cheated in the moment.
Yeah.
But like the rules, you know, talk about cheating as intent, right? And you have like Ricky Hayashi here who investigated the situation. Like, yeah, there was no intent, and you can watch the clip and know that there's no intent because that game is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's already over. What I think is terrifying is the amount of vitriol that Aaron received on Twitter and all forms of social media, Reddit, whatever else. And we also talk about the witch hunt and like they're, you know, and sometimes it's super successful. We've seen how these have brought, I think of what's his name, Betcher, for example. You know, sometimes it is good to be critical of these things. Like, they happen. But we've also seen the flip side of that. You know what I mean? Like, as somebody who knows like Kent Ketter, you know, at least did know him pretty well. He's out in Seattle now and does whatever he wants. But like, you know, this is a good human being. You know what I mean? Like, he got, you know, on the other end of that. So, and his play was a lot more questionable than hers was. Like, it was a mistake. It's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And people were not just, like, criticizing for it, though. Like, ripping her apart. Okay? Now, there's some really gross undercurrents for that.
Yeah, I didn't investigate as far as, like, some of the things that I heard about. So these are things just that I heard about, but they're from people that I, you know, trust and follow on Twitter. But that some of the reasons and how people were deciding to go about being critical of this were not motivated by trying to suss out a cheater, but they were motivated by other leanings that these people may or may not have had.
Yeah.
towards Aaron and if that's true, and to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised.
I posted some stuff on our Discord of like pictures of some threads where just there was a guy like threatening to fight Todd Anderson, like come to my house and fight me. Like, because, and they were just like tweeting stuff at Aaron, just like awful things. And then like a few hours later, like, oh, I said some things I really mean to say. Nope. You typed them and sent them. Here's the thing about the internet. You could type it 100 times and never send it.
That's true.
You chose to do that.
That's true.
That's so weird.
So
I'm not saying you shouldn't apologize. It's good to apologize. But saying that like, that's not me, that's tougher.
That's tougher. A little bit more difficult. But all I'm saying is like, if these were the motivations that you had to be a bad actor in this sort of situation and not try to do things hurtful to Aaron, I think like that's a pretty nasty thing to do. Like, there's a difference between like being critical about sloppy play and like having your own thoughts about it and you know, just being a jerk.
Yeah, I agree.
There's there's also things like just being a hateful human being, and that's just gross.
It's just weird. And I think what's really frustrating about that is, like, one, again, it's good to be critical of the error. And, like, Aaron came out and was like, hey, this was, like, really wrong, this and that. Like,
was really forward about
this. This is, like, unacceptable, and this happened. Like, yeah. It happened. You know what I mean? We can point to so many videos of people playing on extra land, this and that. The key here is, like, one, the investigation from, you know, head guy who's head judge of Pro Tour. So, like, maybe trust that. But, like, the overlap of people tearing Aaron down, who also were like, I need you to show me the receipts on Yuya at a Pro Tour. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? Because, like when you even compare the two, and I mentioned Betcher, like, Betcher got the ban he did because, like, he was manipulating decks. He was using shuffling techniques to manipulate decks. You know, Yuya got kicked out of the Hall of Fame ostensibly for a pattern of patterns. You know what I mean? Purposely marking your deck, like there's such a thing as, like, a cheat of opportunity, right? It was where you make a mistake and you know it and you don't say anything about it, and that's cheating. That's intent, right?
Yeah.
But GRVs are literally GRVs for a reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, people miss things. We the MCQ that we played at a few weeks ago or month, whatever ago, like, I went back and watched my camera match, right? And there's definitely a point where my opponent had a 4/4 steam, runaway steamkin, and I blocked it with a 2-power creature. And in post-combat, he removed counters from that to add mana to his mana pool and kept going. And neither of us realized that she'd be dead. And I said on this cast, like, yeah, I play Arena too much. Like, it marks the damage for me. It's lazy, right? My opponent wasn't cheating.
No.
Did they cheat? Did they break the rule? Yeah, they had a GRV, but it never got caught. We didn't notice it. I don't think that person's a cheater.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things where, like, you have to look at the whole thing. Remember it. Be vigilant both as a player and anywhere else, right? If you see the pattern, right? If you are able to construct a pattern about a player later, maybe. But you do that in a way – like, people talk all the time about these receipts or show me the investigation, this or that. It's like, you're not detectives. You're just an a-hole. Like, I don't know what else to say.
You're just a rando on Twitter.
Yeah, like
– you know,
you're not your gumshoe.
It's not your decision to make. Rush is over here trying to –
dig the carpet.
Dig through the couch. I don't think you're going to get
carpet,
there.
Carpet couch.
I don't think you're going to get there. There you go. That's smart.
I'm going to China. It's not even how it works,
bro. That's not how it works, man. You got to go through, like, their core.
Yeah. And like, it's frustrating because I know that, like, we sit here and have these conversations, like, on here, and there's a large – and here's the thing. I know for a fact, and this was said on Twitter multiple times, a lot of this initially came from, like, MTG headquarters. You know what I mean? Like – that just love that guy. Just awesome. Glad he's still around.
Yo, if anything that you are getting behind came from that person, you're on the wrong side of everything. So, like, stop it. Right. And I don't care if we lose a listener for me saying that.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Like, that's the kind of people who would be like, well, you got on your podcast so you could, I don't know, White Knight or what's the other one? What's the other one where you, like, pretend to be moral? Oh, no, I can't remember.
What is it, Virtue Signaling?
Virtue Signaling, that's it. Oh. The light's on then, I guess. Don't be a crappy person.
Yeah, it's not hard.
I will never understand Twitter as a place where, like, I can get on here. Like, this is larger than Magic, where I can get on here and send the most hateful, vitriolic mess. Oh, wait. I know exactly where it comes from. That's made myself real angry. but like, in all seriousness, like, these are human beings. You know, and I think, like, what's frustrating is, like, you know, social media as a whole, like, has taught us to essentially, you know, we disassociate. You know what I mean? Like, those aren't people. You know what I mean? It's a screen. Who cares? But, like, if you're a part of the Magic community, you go to opens and stuff, like, you've met Aaron before. You may play it against her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You see these people. You know, this is – it is crazy to me. You know what I mean? How many people I know, even just, like – the smallest fraction, but it's like a familiar face. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, it's like, you know, you've seen these people walk, breathe, be humans. Why would you treat them in a way that you would be appalled if you were being treated?
Because Mike, they're a savage cheater and they deserve to be treated
garbage.
Clearly.
Maybe that's the perfect crime, where you only cheat in games where you are 100% ahead of your opponent.
Light years ahead.
Like, you said you didn't watch the video. That's fine. Just go pull – don't even click play on the video. Pull up and it has the image of the video, and you can see the 30 permanents on her side of the board to the lands and two things on our opponents. Nope. Nope. I don't think it was light up the stage that did it.
I don't think so. I don't think that's what it was.
Guessing we were getting there either way. I have been very angry at, like, you know, habitual cheaters who haven't gotten punished enough. You know, we've ranted about Bertoncini, who got so many things here. But never once did I, like, open up Twitter and just be like, well, time to threaten this human being in a very aggressive way. No, I've sat on this podcast and said, ban cheaters. You know what I mean? Like, if you're upset about something and you really think that you have a point to make, talk to the appropriate people in an appropriate fashion for it. But otherwise, shut up. I wish people would just treat it like you're in, like, elementary school again. And, like, Twitter should always be your inside voice. Always your inside voice. You're talking to a teacher, and if you call that teacher any sort of X names, you make a little game. You know, make a little three column graph, where if you combine these things into a spicy, you know, insult sandwich, just any of those things that would get you put in timeout, just you can't say those.
You can't just don't.
And then learn to use your words, again, like an elementary student.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I think, like, when you're looking at a lot of it, it definitely feels like there is just some fishy about where a lot of it's coming from. And it doesn't feel good. Like, it doesn't feel like, you know. Obviously, like, it's never should feel good, I guess, but it doesn't feel motivated by.
Here's the thing, though. You're absolutely right. Because when you say feel good, it is satisfying when someone who has cheated gets caught. Like, there is a satisfaction to that. You know, we can all be a part of that, where it's like, okay, you know, there is catharsis because of these things. But again, like, if you're going to put one mistake into this, then we're all cheaters, because every single one of you has made a mistake that you have, I guarantee, you have drawn, like, a cyborg card and, like, either considered or just didn't call a judge, right? Because you already won the game. Like, the game's already over. What does it even matter? Honestly, that's a bigger cheat than what, you know, Barrage did. So, like, these are the kinds of things, like, oh, you played an extra land. You know what I mean? You've done this. Magic's a hard game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially at its highest levels.
Those sleeves, I don't know. They were marked in very specific places, but I need the receipts. I need more information from you, Watsy, because you couldn't have done it. But this person wins Star City Open, and they're a monster. Don't you see, Morgan?
No, I don't.
I could go on and on about this stuff that I just hate. So, like, again, virtue signaling, right? Like, all that kind of stuff. Like, we're not going to tweet at her. I'm not going to be like, hey, we did you assault. That's not what this is. Be a decent human being.
Yeah, just
be a decent human being.
Just look at context. Like, look at the context. Trust people that are experts in their field. So trust judges. Trust people that don't.
But I didn't get to interview Ricky myself.
No, and, like, here's the thing. Like, oh man, the judges—they're on the take, man. I don't know. Like you gotta,
got paid. That's, like, sweet Star City.
This is
money.
The thing that bothers me in current society is, like, you present people with, like, experts in the field, like, trusted things, facts, figures, numbers, and it's always like they always have to, like, jump through this weird, like, Illuminati, like, conspiracy theory about, like, why this is how you're wrong, and they don't have the wherewithal inside of them to, like, hear the words that are coming out of their mouth or they're typing out. They're just like, I presented, like, an Occam's razor sort of solution where it was the simplest answer is often the easiest, and you are telling me that, like, aliens are the reason why, like, your tap water doesn't taste good anymore. And it's like, I'm just like, it's probably the fluoride. And they're like, well, the fluoride's rotting your brain, so that's why you're thinking like this. Why don't you have your tinfoil hat on, you weirdo? And I'm the weirdo. So, like, stop it. If you're doing that, if you're, like, continually jumping through hoops when facts are presented to you, like, stop it. It's not some, like, deeper hole that you have to find.
I could vaccinate my kids, but Jenny McCarthy's, like, so pretty.
And she's so pretty. You can't get that pretty without being so smart about vaccines.
Yeah, but maybe I'd be that pretty, too, if I didn't have these damn vaccines in my body.
I want polio, but I also don't have good looks.
Yeah, get them out. I want to be hot. and dying of polio.
I saw Captain America. He went in that iron lung and came out hot.
Yeah. Put me in that waffle maker for people.
All right, well, I think it's enough signaling for us.
Oh, my God. Hey, did you know that the first reported
measles case?
Measles case in Ohio came out of this. So, cool. Come to Ohio. We have measles.
Everybody's going to have measles, man.
Yeah, I know. But we'll look real fine.
So fine.
So hot.
The hottest looking measles hazard, measles havers in the world.
You've never seen measles this sexy.
Good Lord.
They're hot and ready to pop.
Gross. Gross.
Is that the show, Morgan? I'm dying inside.
Oh, yeah. We're both dying inside,
of
folks.
Of the measles.
Eventually. More than likely, so. Oh, well. Well, that's life.
I hope we lost viewers.
Well, whatever, man.
I hope we lost viewers because they shouldn't be watching us. That's creepy.
Yeah. yeah, I don't know. Listeners, if we made you feel uncomfortable with this show... too bad. I don't know. I'll tell you. This is how we feel about life.
Just wait till next week. We're upping it now every week.
Just even more and more uncomfortable. but that's going to be everything for us this week. This weekend, you can definitely watch some magic, though. They're going to be there, as if you know. Star City Games is going to be in Philadelphia having a team-constructed tournament. And then there's also going to be Magic Fest Denver. Which is going to be standard. Now, to be fair, I don't know if Denver's actually going to have coverage, but you can at least read about it, I guess. But that's going to be what's happening over this weekend. And, of course, San Diego Comic-Con. I don't think the panel's being streamed, but I imagine there's plenty of people on the aforementioned Twitter that'll be there and be tweeting out some stuff that happens from it. And then they said that there'll be a post on the Magic Home HQ once they announce everything that's going to have the same information that's going to be in the panel. So there you go. All right. Well, if you want to reach out to us, which you may after this episode, I guess, you can do so in various methods, and we may or may not respond.
If you're upset at us, only tweet at Morgan.
Only me.
I don't have time.
I'm at Morg War Marshal, so feel free to yell at me, I guess. But if you want to tweet at the show, it's your NSTEP is the username, and it's at your NSTEP when you tweet at us. We also have an email address, at your NSTEP at gmail.com, and then Facebook, facebook.com/@yournstep. If you're listening to us via a podcast app that lets you leave a rating or review, please feel free to do so. We feel that we're a five-star podcast, and we hope you agree. If you're listening to us via Legit MTG, thank you so much for picking up the show and check out some of the articles they have on there and their web store. You can also check out our other sponsor, Comic Town at worldofcomictown.com. Again, keep an eye on their page and check out Black, White, and Red all over if you are interested in their comic book podcast. Well, again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. And you have a great one. Bye.